Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Some may consider it counterintuitive for an educator to suggest that it's just as important to prepare a student for failure as for success. Just as athletes benefit from learning how to lose, our guest today says students need to learn how to deal with and respond to the real-world frustrations and failures that lie ahead. And very few of us go through life without experiencing both. Tom Herr has put that philosophy into words in a book titled Fostering Grit: How Do I Prepare My Students for the Real World? Tom Herr, he heads the new city school here, joins us in studio. Tom, nice to see you again.
Thanks, Don. I appreciate the warm weather you created for us.
Oh, my pleasure. Hopefully I'll make it even a little bit warmer before the end of the week. Tom, let's begin this discussion with your definition of the word grit.
Grit is really long-term tenacity. It's resilience. It's hanging in. It is not being deterred by failure. It's persevering despite the fact that you're not being successful.
Yeah. Well, we get that, and I know it comes. The title comes in part from the movie True Grit with John Wayne.
Yes,
there is a certain connection there between and the character of people. But let me ask you how parents and how educators are responding to this notion that you've got to approach it from this angle.
Well, it's really interesting, Don. Grit in some ways, you used the word counterintuitive earlier, runs so much against what we tend to think of in schools. Teachers judge themselves on their kids' success, on kids smiling. We all want kids to do well. And what I'm suggesting is, hold on a second, that needs to happen, but we need to also teach children grit. We need to teach them how to respond to failure and frustration, and that doesn't happen if they can't experience frustration and failure. I run, as you said, the New City School, and I do a parent letter every Friday. I've been doing that for years and years and years. And I talked about grit, I guess, a year and a half ago, and I got more parent response to grit than anything I have ever written. And inevitably, parents said, I want my kid to have grit. You're on target. Now, this is great. But, of course, while every parent wants his or her kid to have grit, nobody wants their kid to cry. So that's the dilemma.
But, you know, I look at this society today in which many people would suggest that parents might be somewhat overprotective of their kids these days for whatever reason. I guess it's a natural nurturing a way of life. So those folks, I would think, would be a little bit leery of it.
Well, I think you're right. Conceptually, everybody likes it, but people are leery. You know, it's the trophy mentality. Every kid on the team gets a trophy irrespective of the team's record.
Exactly.
One of the things I've been doing that I think helps, because I talk about grit being a dialogue in the sense that parents need to be involved, kids need to be involved. It's not something that you do to children or for them. You do it with them. And I look at grit as part of the response to my favorite question, and that is I'll ask people, are there differences between success in school and success in life? And we believe at the New City School certainly that there are. You need to be able to read, write, and calculate, absolutely, period, semicolon. However, comma, that's only part of the game. And if you buy into success in life as part of our goal, then you can see why kids need to learn grit, even though parents tend to be protective.
I use the analogy with sports, and we've been hearing this for a long time, that, you know, who was it, Vince Lombardi, who said that winning isn't everything, but losing isn't anything. And that kind of philosophy was out there for a long time. But you hear a lot of athletes saying it's as important to learn how to lose a game and deal with that as it is to win.
Well, it's interesting. If you read what people say about Michael Jordan, perhaps the greatest basketball player of all time, the people who know him don't talk about his physical abilities, which were remarkable. They talk about the fact that he outworked everybody. Mm-hmm. Years and years ago, for listeners who have been here a while, the St. Louis Hawks were in town, and I had a friend whose father was a policeman. And she said one time, oh, my dad's got to work late. There's a Hawks game. And I said, you mean your dad's working at the game? And she said, oh, no, he's working after the game. And I said, what do you mean? Well, turns out Bob Pettit, number nine, St. Louis all-time basketball player, first guy to score 20,000 points. After every home game, people would shower, go home. Pettit would go back out on the court and shoot baskets every night. And that's grit. What he was doing was saying, however good I am, I'm going to be better. I'm not going to give up. I'm going to try my best. And that's something I think we would argue that educators have a responsibility to teach kids. It's not something we can just assume child A has it, child B doesn't. We have to help inculcate it and develop it.
Yeah. I guess it was the book The Tipping Point, in which it was pointed out that to be successful at something, you have to do it 10,000 times.
Absolutely.
And then maybe 10,000 more times.
Right.
to perfect it. Michael Jordan and Bob Pettit being examples.
Yep.
Of all of that.
Yeah. And he used Bill Gates. He talked about the Beatles. Mm-hmm. It's that same thing. And as you know, human nature, we all like doing things we do well. So it's very easy to kind of get into a groove. You're being successful. You continue. Grit is, in fact, not only getting out of your comfort zone, but recognizing that growth comes from how you respond to failure. Mm. And again, that's kind of alien in our culture.
Well, how do you go about teaching this? Obviously, you have to put them in situations that are designed for them to fail.
Yeah, and it's tough. And let me start, if I might, by kind of distinguishing. There's two groups, and we can talk about them. There's the high flyers, and these are the kids that we all knew. You know, they were the kids who are on the honor roll. They play shortstop. They've got the lead in the school play, girls field hockey. They do everything well. Those are the kids who, if we're not careful, they're going to hit the wall. They may hit the wall at age 18, 28, but they're not prepared at all to hit the wall. And at the other end of the spectrum, there are those kids who come to school and aren't succeeding. And failure is too much a part of their life. And we need to teach those kids grit as well. I would add parenthetically, one can make the case that those kids have more grit just because of the living conditions that they're transcending. But in any case, for either group of kids, for all kids, in my book I talk about the fact that I think there are six steps to grit. I talk about setting the environment. And too often in schools, Don, if you walk in, you see a few names or the honor roll. What we don't see acclaimed on the walls and the halls are kids who've worked their tail off, whose trajectory is good, who are doing better. Somehow we don't recognize that. And it seems to me the environment is saying that we appreciate your tenacity, your grit, that you're trying. Then setting the expectations, talking with the kids about grit as developmentally appropriate, whether you're using the word resilience, tenacity, grit, effort. This needs to be on kids' radar screen. They need to know why you're doing it, teaching the vocabulary. And then creating the frustration. And I've been talking about grit as a dialogue. It's something with kids. And, you know, you say to kids, okay, now next Tuesday is going to be a hard day. We're going to be doing things differently. I'm going to make it hard for you. My job on next Tuesday, you're going to be frustrated. You're not going to like what we're doing. You're going to be mad at me. But we're going to get through it. And so it's working with them. Kids go into that. You create the frustration. They learn. And then you reflect when it's over. How did you feel? What did you do? How did you respond? And then you learn and you start the cycle again. It's not something you do all the time, maybe even every day. But it's part of kids learning so that they feel confident that they can encounter situations with which they're not familiar and they can succeed.
Well, I've heard it described, and I think it probably right from your book or review of your book perhaps, that this is – strikes some as cold and heartless.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You know, and it's funny. I wrote the book. I wrote the draft, and I really liked it. And I read it, and something was bothering me, and I read it again. And I thought, I don't like how I'm coming across. I was, you know, at New City School, we talk about joyful learning. When I do presentations, I tell people that what's important in a school is the smile quotient. When you walk in, the kids should be smiling. The teachers should be smiling. People should want to come to school. And then here I am talking about creating situations where kids are hitting the wall. So you're right. This is not cold. This is not heartless. This is really done out of compassion for kids and doing it with them so they get what's happening. It doesn't make it easier for them, but they understand the motive.
How responsive are these kids when you're telling them what you're up to? How responsive are they to it?
I think actually they're pretty remarkably responsive, and we talk about that. I've talked about it with my faculty, and, you know, we'll have kids, kindergartners, who'll come in and say to a teacher, I used grit this weekend. And what they meant is that something wasn't easy, and they kept trying. They kept hanging in. It's a journey for all of us, just as some people, I think, are friendlier than others or more outgoing. Some people have more grit. Our job is to be conscious of where the kid is, pick up and work on it from there. And again, kids see the merit in this. They know that being the best soccer player may not be because you're the fastest. It's because you tried the hardest, even when you're frustrated.
How about, and your school has a great reputation, and you've done a wonderful job over three decades that you've been there. But what about schools where underperformance seems to be the norm?
Yeah. And that is a horse of a different color, if you will. But I think grit is even more important. And too often, I think, we give kids pathways where they're not likely to succeed at all. And it seems to me what educators need to do is find out what kids can do well. That's, you know, we've been using multiple intelligences. Find out how they learn and give them opportunities to do that. The trajectory might be a little less steep. You might have a little shorter time period. But what you want to do is help these kids capitalize on their success and help them understand that success is not simply doing what you do well. It's learning from your mistakes. There's a woman named Esther Dyson who's a technology guru, and I've been using a phrase she came up with years ago called make new mistakes. And we talk about that a lot at my school. You know, making old mistakes doesn't mean you're smart. But if you don't make mistakes, that's not good either because you're not learning from them. Making new mistakes means you make a mistake, you pick yourself up, you learn from it, and you move forward.
You know, it's just you remind me in talking about making mistakes of the definition of insanity, and that is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result.
That's Einstein, yeah.
Yeah, right. Was it Einstein?
Yes, yeah.
All right. Well, I go back to these underperforming schools. When we talk about success, how do we measure it there? I mean, it's got to be measured differently than it is at your school and some other schools I wouldn't name, but, you know, they're out
right,
there.
Right, right. And one of the things I think educators should do at every school, my school included, is certainly we have outcomes on which kids are measured, whether that's test scores or essays or portfolios like we use. But we also need, I think, to be monitoring and measuring kids' efforts. How hard did they try? How resilient were they? In my book, I talk about actually having a table that kids self-reflect on. And when kids turn in a test, I want them to tell me, how hard was this? Did you hang in? Did you try? And what I want to do is congratulate them, even on small successes, to reinforce that. Too many kids, I think, go through school feeling that this isn't a place where I can succeed. And part of our job as educators is to help children see that everybody can succeed. The measurements may be different, but there's a way for this school to be yours too.
What kind of a burden does this place on teachers? I mean, teachers have to be very, very perceptive, obviously.
Yes, yeah, yeah. You're right. Any good teacher is a teacher who looks at where the child is working and goes from there. And it's no different with grit. Kids have different thresholds for frustration. And what you've got to do, that was, I think, the fifth step that I talk about, excuse me, monitoring, looking at where the kid is talking. I think if you're going to work on grit in your classroom, by definition, it means you're going to have lots of one-to-one dialogues with kids. This is not a large group activity. This is sitting down and talking to Susie, talking to Maurice, talking to Johnny, and picking him or her up where they go. So it means teachers, if you will, work harder maybe, but it's more rewarding, and the bottom line is the kids gain. And every teacher I know, if the kid succeeds, they're happy.
And you're finding little resistance from teaching staffs to this concept?
Little resistance. There's an awareness. And again, as I said at the beginning, this is not something that educators are taught. You know, Mr. Chips everybody loved. And so talking about doing things where you're consciously trying to create difficulty for kids is alien to people. But as we talk and walk through it and they understand the rationale, they get it. And again, part of gripping a dialogue, the kids are on board too.
Yeah. We have to take a break. My guest in studio is Tom Herr. He heads the New City School, and he also has a book that is out relatively recently called Fostering Grit, How Do I Prepare My Students for the Real World? And what this involves, if you've been listening, you know, but if you've just joined us, what it involves is teaching kids how to fail. What's as important as teaching them how to succeed. Back to continue our conversation, and I would like very much to get the listening audience in on this. What do you think of this as a concept? We already have a call or two, and we'll start taking those when we come back. Again, Tom Herr, the guest. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Tom Herr of the New City School. I'm going to go right to the phones, Tom, before going back to my questions, because Scott from Chesterfield called as soon as we came on the air, and I want to get him into the discussion. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, I was in a foster care home one time, and there were like these three babies, and maybe they were toddlers, I'm not sure, but while I was there, all they did was cry, and the foster care mom said, I'm pretty sure she said, that they were born addicted to crack. Okay, and what's your, you know, all the time I was there, they did nothing but cry. So what's your program going to do for them?
Wow, that, Scott, that's a tough, tough question. You know, the short answer is I don't know. I feel for those kids. I feel for the way they were brought into the world. At some point, hopefully, they'll get beyond that. And then wherever they're starting from, grit is going to be something that's going to be important for them in succeeding.
Scott, thanks so much for the call. You know, I have to interject something here that I learned years ago, and we were very much concerned at one point about the number of crack babies that were likely to be suddenly out there because crack was such a severe problem. Still is, of course. And what they were doing with those babies in order to keep them from suffering the consequences of a secondary addiction was they simply would hug them. That was the way they nurtured these kids. It wasn't any medication. It wasn't anything, any psychological. They simply would take these children as infants and hug them, and that did more good than anything else that they could come up with.
How cool!
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just it really is. It struck me. This was 20 years ago, I guess, that all of this was going on. I assume they're still doing it. Let's bring in Dennis from Overland. Dennis, go ahead. You're on the air with Tom Herr.
Yes. When I was listening to the author there and teacher, when you mentioned Michael Jordan, one of the things that happened with Michael Jordan when he went to college, he was a freshman. He was the best player on the team, but he carried the balls and picked them up at the end of practice. So there was things that he knew how to do. And it certainly paid off later on. But I told the screener that when I was coaching young kids and men and women, the problem that you had sometimes is if you had kids that are great players, men and women, and they weren't always used to losing.
Right.
And whereas when you had, I had a team where they were a bunch of good players and then a bunch of kids that were brand new. And when we started, as the seasons went on, when we were playing against the teams that were used to winning all the time, it was rather frustrating for them because they were always used to success. So it basically bears out what he was talking.
Dennis, thank you so much for the call. Does this can this backfire?
Sure, I think that it's very, very important that students be enthusiastic learners and want to learn. I talked about the smile quotient. And I think if it's not done well, what it can do is work against kids' enthusiasm for learning. We don't want kids to be reluctant to take risks. We don't want them to be afraid to excel. So, again, it's part of the dialogue. It's got to be done with kids. Dennis's point about really, really good athletes who maybe aren't the best player because they're afraid to get out of their comfort zone. You know, they can do one thing, they can do it well, but they're reluctant to take a risk. Sometimes people will ask me about what about adults who don't have grit? And I think there's probably lots of people who don't, and what they've done, this is my value judgment, is they've destined themselves to a situation where they're not going to fail. Well, they can do something, they can do it comfortably, and they may be happy, in which case, who am I to criticize them? Mm-hmm. But I think they miss opportunities because they're reluctant to take a chance because they don't want to fail.
Is this something, do you think, that can be applied to adults, or is it too late?
Oh, no, absolutely.
And who does it to them?
Well, I think it's part of the conscious, you know, the dialogue that I talk about. I think adults can have that around the dinner table, you know, husband and wife, people who are living together, who are friends, here's what I'm going to work on. When I talked about teaching kids the vocabulary, one of the terms we talk a lot about is comfort zone. What's your comfort zone getting out of it? I wrote an article a couple years ago about educators and using the summer to get out of their comfort zone, to read books that are different, to go different places. And it seems to me that if you want to develop grit, you can do that. You do it very consciously, and you know that it's going to be hard times. You know, people who lose weight, people who break the cigarette habit, in some respects, it's the same process. It's a thoughtful, goal-oriented monitoring process.
Well, let's go back to the kids for the moment, Tom Herr. When do you start all this? At what age?
Well, I think like anything that's important, younger is better. We have teachers of kindergartners and teachers of four-year-olds who are talking with their kids about grit. They're doing it gently. They're doing it mildly. One of those things you do, though, is you watch kids, and you don't let them stop doing something just because it's hard. Young children can find things at which they excel, and they'll continue doing that forever. Part of the job of the teacher is to say, hold on, let's finish this. We have learning centers in a lot of our classrooms, and we make sure kids don't just select the ones which they're going to do well. You do it supportively, you do it comfortably, you do it with hugs, but you teach kids that you don't give up.
you know, you mentioned the high flyers a little while ago, those mm-hmm. students who are already successful right. and assume that it's going to be that way for the rest of their life. I'm curious about dealing with them and having the less confident student at the same time. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you convince the high flyer that he or she is not going to be flying high forever?
Well, and you're right. That is a hard message. To jump ahead a bit, I've been talking about this for a while, over a year, and I've had a number of people from local universities talk about the fact that, you know, they get these freshmen who were in the top of their class. That's the whole class they have. Well, guess what? Half of them are going to be in the bottom 50%, and that's really hard for those kids. And I think with your high flyers, again, as is age appropriate, you can talk with them about that. We use multiple intelligences, and we got into using MI as a way of giving kids opportunities to use their strengths to learn. I now talk about the reciprocal way to do it, and that is sometimes taking kids out of their intelligence strength, getting the kid who's really a good reader and a good writer and having her use her musical intelligence, which may be hard for her, having a kid who's not a good athlete use his bodily kinesthetic intelligence. And again, you do that consciously with them so they know why they're being frustrated.
Yeah. Let's take another call. We have Ed, who is calling from St. Louis. Ed, go ahead. You're on the air with Tom Herr.
Yes, I have a 16-year-old daughter who went to New City School, which is one of the luckiest things that ever happened to her, really. That place did a great job. She is a confident young woman. But what was more lucky, she was born to her mom and dad, who loved her no matter what she did.
And thanks for the call. Well, that's an important ingredient. We touched upon
Absolutely.
That a little while ago. The parent, obviously, is key.
Totally. Parents are more important than schools. It's hard for me to say that as a school guy, but parents are more important. Mm-hmm. And Ed's right. If you love kids, you give them that proper foundation support. Then they can take risks. Then they can fail because they know you love them.
Yeah. So important. What about the emotional readiness of a student to accept some of these things?
That is key. And again, when you think about how kids judge themselves, how society they think judge them, it's all on success. And we're talking about putting kids in a situation where they're not going to succeed and having them be aware of that. Some kids are very aware, they're receptive, they get it. Other kids, it's a much harder sell. And I think as with anything we do, it's got to be based on the kid's readiness, what the kid can do. We want our kids to want to come to school. Every educator wants that. So even when they're going to have something that's tough, even when they're going to be frustrated, it's got to be done in a way where children know we care about them and we have their interests at heart.
Again, our phone number is 382-8255 is the phone number if you'd like to get into this discussion. That's 382-TALK. If you want to remember it that way, you can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on air. Another thing that would occur to me be critical here, Tom, would be establishing a balance between success and failure.
Absolutely. Yeah,
and how do you go about that?
Well, and the balance is tipped on the success side. I mean, what I'm talking about is something that certainly isn't done routinely, regularly. It's got to be in there, but we want our kids to be successful. We want them to know that they are learners and learning is fun. We want them to be confident in approaching new and strange situations, and that largely comes from success with the ability to have grit when you know you're not going to succeed.
Mm-hmm. You had mentioned earlier that there were six various components mm-hmm. to this whole process. Let's walk through it and take a typical or hypothetical case, if you will, and exactly how you would follow it from beginning to end.
Well, and if we're talking about using grit in a school situation, you know, I keep using the word dialogue. That, I think, done best is not something that this teacher or that teacher does. It's done as part of a faculty discussion. And that gets back to when you walk in the school, what are the messages on the wall? Are we showing kids who've succeeded because they worked hard? Are we showing kids who maybe didn't get the A, but they worked their tail off? So setting the environment, celebrating those kinds of things.
This is kind of a subliminal thing, isn't it?
Well, it is. It's around, yeah. Sometimes I talk about the word phrase ambient learning, mm-hmm. that you ought to be able to walk down the halls and there are messages. There's a wonderful book out called Mindset by Carol Dweck, D-W-E-C-K, and she talks about the fixed mindset and the growth mindset. And it's exactly this. It's kids walking down the halls, walking in the classrooms, seeing that their growth is important. Then in the classroom, that's step one. Step two is the teacher setting the expectation, talking about grit, talking about next week, we're not going to be easy. We're going to do something hard. Here's what I'm doing. Boys and girls, I'm going to grade this paper much more strictly than I have in the past. Let me tell you why I'm doing it. Setting that out, telling them. Step three is the vocabulary, letting them know so they can use the words. A key, and Don, you implied this earlier, is kids reflecting and being conscious. So I want them to have the terms, whether that's frustration, resilience, comfort zone, whatever. Step four is you actually create the frustration, and that's going to be different for different kids. It's going to be different for a high flyer than for the kid who's really struggling.
Let's be so specific about how you create the frustration.
Well, one of the things you might do, you know, if you've got this little boy who's a great writer, who's going to be a novelist, and he's turning in his paper, you say to him, Fred, you need to know when you turn in this paper, I'm going to be a much tougher grader than I was in the past. I'm not going to be letting you get by with anything. In fact, if I do my job well, you're going to really be upset with me. And so you really put that out there with him. The same thing, you may have a young girl who's a great artist. Same thing with her. So a teacher can be more demanding in expectations. Teacher can have kid do the work again. You're not going to get it right until you finish it. At my school, and this is a fun one, our performing arts teacher, he teaches music, movement, and drama, is his way of teaching kids grit. He taught them plate spinning. And he had plastic plates, thank goodness. You know, we would have had... Yes. Crystal or china all over the place.
No water for crystal.
That's right. So they were spinning plates. And sure enough, there were some kids who did that 30 seconds and they were ready to quit. And there were other kids who really worked at it. And so that was a safe way, if you will. Nobody gets a grade on plate spinning to work at it. So you create the frustration depending on who the kid is. You're raising the expectations. You're being more rigorous in what you expect. You're not letting them get up. You're consciously putting them in a place where they are going to be frustrated. And then you come back, you do that, and then you monitor it. You talk about it. How did you feel, what happened, how are you responding, and what can we learn? And it's a circle, and it starts all the way over. So the frustration that I would create for Johnny would be different than that which I would create for Susie, which would be different than that which I would create for Leo.
This is where the teacher's got to be very, very careful.
Totally.
But,
totally.
You know, Tom, it occurs to me when you're telling that youngster that I'm going to be tougher on you this time than last time, that you're really kind of setting yourself up for a potential problem here. The kid saying, hey, they're picking on me. He goes home, he says, they're picking on me. Why me? That sort of thing. And the parent comes storming into school saying, well, you know, why are you being tougher on Johnny than you are on Joe?
Yeah, that could happen. I don't think so. Again, and that comes back to setting the expectation. Is the teacher, you're talking about it with the kids. Johnny knows why you're being tougher on him. It's not because you don't like him or he's got long hair or short hair. It's because this is something he needs. You talk about it with the class. You're being tougher on everybody. You know, I would, if I'm a teacher in my parent letter, I'd say to folks, I hope your kids really enjoy being in my class. You need to know next week you're probably going to hear more complaints than usual, and here is why. I want those parents to be informed. So when Johnny complains to mom, she says, hold on a second. I read that letter from your teacher. Here's what's happening.
You know, just as an aside, because I'm going to take a break, and we have a number of calls, and I promise our callers that we'll get to them. But in the headlines I read a couple of moments ago, we were talking about this school transfer issue, which you're well aware of, and I'm sure everybody is, shipping kids all over the area because of unaccredited districts. But how would this work in this kind of environment? You have kids leaving their home environment, going someplace else. They're strangers to their new teachers, strangers to this new school community. I mean, it just seems to me that this stuff just flies out the window when you get into that kind of a situation.
Well, and it is a difficult situation, I feel, for those kids. You know, the case I would make, particularly with these kids who are now, you're right, they're in a foreign situation. They've been on a bus for 20, 40 minutes, whatever. If I'm a teacher, I'm going to talk with them about grit, and I'm going to find out what it is they do well and what it is they don't do as well, because we're going to work on it together. And my promise to those kids is by the end of the year, you're going to have more grit than you do now, and that's going to help you wherever you attend school.
Right. Well, that's no question about the problem and the fact that this and other issues need to be addressed as a result of it. I'll take a call before we go to the break. We'll bring in Hillary calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Hillary. You're on the air.
Hi. So... I have, and I apologize if you've answered this already, I have kind of a two-part question. So I have some family members, some children in our family who are, I guess, what we would consider praise junkies. They've just been told everything they do, you know, like everything they do is just the greatest. And so then they actually will come up to you and just ask you, you know, can you tell me I did a good job? And it gets, you know, it's sort of discouraging when I think about their future, like, well, you know, what's going to happen to them. So part of my question is, how do you kind of undo the praise junkiness? And then another part related, and then I'll hang up and listen. So I tutor kids who are below, who have literacy troubles. And I have to say that it is very hard not to, like, jump up and down and cheer when they read that first sentence. And, you know, and it's hard to put barriers in their way because they already have so many. So it's kind of like, how do you find that fine line between appropriate praise and the kind of praise that just sets them up to fail in the future?
Hillary, thank you for the call. Both sides of the coin there, Tom.
Yeah, those are great questions. I love the praise junkie. I may, Hillary, quote you on that when I use that. I think you're exactly right. And I don't know these kids or the family, obviously, their age. But I think it'd be interesting to begin a dialogue with them about that very thing. And why do you feel that way? And I concur with you. I worry about kids who have that trajectory because the world ain't like that when they get older. And how are they going to respond? In terms of the tutoring, I agree with you. When these kids who are struggling get it right, I want to hug them. I want to celebrate. I want to give them a high five totally. And at the same time, once they've had some success, I want to talk about the fact that, you know, they probably did that because of their grit. That's why they succeeded. And let's talk about how we can capitalize on that and build on it.
Yeah. You talk about the praise junkies. When they get out in that real world and some boss or somebody takes exactly the opposite approach.
Right.
It's got to be a little tough if they're not prepared for it. Tom Herr is our guest. He's the author of Fostering Grit, How Do I Prepare My Students for the Real World? It's really a discussion about why it's necessary at times to teach your kids how to fail and how to deal with that. We'll come back and take more calls in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again. Welcome back to our conversation with Tom Herr. We're talking about forming grit in your youngster, a grit to be able to deal with those obstacles that come along in life, as they so often do. Not every day is a successful day. Tom Herr has written the book Fostering Grit. Let's go right back to the phones and bring in Mike calling from Olivet. Go ahead, Mike. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
I've been a youth sports coach for many years, and my question is, with kids not knowing how to lose, are we setting them up to do that by the parents who, you know, Timmy's the greatest kid in the world. He's the greatest athlete. He's not. But we award kids now, like in some of the wrestling competitions, out to sixth and eighth place. They don't realize what it means to lose. And then when it comes to this is a little bit of a different situation, but when it comes to that dealing with complications in life, like you said, with the boss isn't going to be that way or the real world's not that way, we don't teach kids, I don't think, adequately to defend themselves and to realize that sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, but you got to keep going and you got to keep pushing. And through athletics, I really enjoyed that. But, you know, you've got those kids that their parents will take them and put them somewhere else because, you know, I don't want him to learn that, you know, you win, you lose, and or he's not the best because Timmy is the best. And it doesn't always work that way. And I think at some points we're teaching kids not to deal with things realistically, but how we want them to be.
Mike,
I don't know if that makes sense or not.
Yeah, Mike, I agree with you totally. It's interesting. When I talk with adults, and I've been traveling and doing this, most people say they learn their grit in an athletic performance of some kind. And I think maybe that's because it's visible and your failures are obvious. But you're exactly right. Too many kids, I think, grow up thinking they're the star when, in fact, they're not. And that's not fair to those children.
Yeah. You got to bring the coaches into this whole philosophy, too. And again, going back to the parents, because we've all been to those games where the parents are the most obnoxious creatures around because of their attitude in the stands and the things they say and their approach to it. Speaking of parents, let's bring Manu in. I think I pronounced that right. I hope so. Into the discussion. Calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Manu.
Hi. Hi, Tom. I have three kids at New City, and I have to say they're richer and grittier for the experience. I wanted to emphasize the important role parents must play in fostering grit. It has to be a cooperative enterprise. Do the parents praise the outcome, the achievement, or do they highlight the effort, the work? And I would argue that the latter approach cultivates grit. You know, the child says, "Look, Mom," after completing a task, and the parent, I think, has to focus on the task. I see you use your imagination. I see you really concentrated on that task. That, I think, is the type of observation that helps the child to focus on effort, on work. What Tom and everyone is doing at New City would be for naught if I, as a parent, become a praise junkie, to borrow one of the phrases one of the callers used. So I just wanted to put that out there and thank Tom and everyone else in New City for all they're doing for my kids and a lot of other kids. Thank you.
Thanks, Manu. Yeah. A quick sidebar. He's exactly right. One of the things I talk about is when we praise kids, we need to praise the verb, not the noun. So instead of saying, "Sally, you are a good soccer player," we say, "Sally, you tried really hard." Instead of saying, "Arthur, you painted that really well," we say, "Boy, we really like your creativity." We congratulate them on their effort, on their tenacity, on hanging in, rather than on the product.
You know, one of the things I should point out here, and I may have been guilty of this during the course of the program, that we are not talking about teaching kids to fail. We're teaching them how to respond to failure.
Thank
and
you.
There is a difference there.
Yes, yes.
Well, let's take it from there then. Once you've subjected these children to a frustrating situation where it's difficult to succeed and they don't succeed, where do you take it from there?
Well, then I think as a good teacher or as a good parent or as a good coach, you step back and you find out where they can succeed. One of the things we do is we create situations for children to succeed so they can build on their success. When Hillary talked about her tutoring and the kid was getting it, you applaud, you clap. The success might be relatively minor, but for that kid it's big, and that's okay. You pick up kids where they are. You help them move forward. Along the way, you get them used to succeeding so that they can deal with the frustration that comes from failure.
Is there a point at which it's too late to learn this lesson for a student?
No, see, I'm an optimist. I don't think it's ever too late to learn anything. I think with effort, we can do anything, and whether you're 15 or 55, if you want to learn it, you can do it.
We have an email from Maria here I'd like to read. How do you capture trying, effort? What one may regard externally as not trying, but say the child internally is doing his or her hardest to do what he or she wants to or is asked to do?
Wonderful, wonderful question. Yeah. Two things, Maria. The first one I would say, and I don't know you, but wherever your child attends school, on their report card, effort ought to be shown. When teachers hand papers back, they should respond to that. And one of the ways they know that is by you talk to the kid. You're right. Johnny's really looking like he's working and Freddie isn't. Well, I need to talk to them. I need to establish that expectation for grit so we can reflect on how hard they're working. We really want kids to be in charge of themselves. Howard Gardner calls that intrapersonal intelligence. And one of the ways that they develop that is by knowing their strengths, knowing their weaknesses, and having them be partners with us in learning it. And then absolutely, you record that, you applaud that on the report card.
Now, we have some lines open at 382-8255 if you want to talk to Tom Herr. By the way, that email writer was Marla. Marla, not Maria. Misread it. So my apologies to Marla, but thank you for a very, very good question. How about the teachers as role models here? Again, we've talked a lot about how delicate this whole situation can be for teachers if they're not properly trained, I guess, or probably aware of what's going on, but they are always role models. How about in this context?
Totally, Don. In fact, I talked about that in my book, about that the adults should be role models. Now, you've got to be careful about what's appropriate to share and what's not appropriate to share, but if you're a kid, chances are you see the adults and you think they're always successful. You see this teacher in front of the room. You don't know that she was up till midnight doing a lesson plan. You don't know that when she was in college, she had trouble with geometry or whatever. And I think part of our role as being an adult model is letting kids know that things did not always come easily to us. When I'm talking about grit with kids, absolutely, I need to talk about the grit that I've had to display to get where I, Tom Herr, am today. And I think parents should do that too. Too often, again, as adults, we get ourselves in situations where we don't have to do the things we don't do well, and we don't let our kids see us failing. I get that. But we need to talk with our kids about how things are hard for us and how it looks to you like this is easy for me, but that's only because I've worked those 10,000 hours about which Malcolm Gladwell wrote.
Right. That's the Tipping Point book that I was referring to just a little while ago. One of the things that you include in your book, and this book is primarily for educators, I assume.
Yes.
Having been through it, it's not a guide for parents necessarily, although obviously what you're talking about is something parents should be aware of.
Right.
You have a number of surveys that you use in the book to kind of as guideposts, mm-hmm. I guess, along the way. Tell us about them and how they're used.
Well, the surveys, and it comes back to Marla's point about knowing which kids are ready, the surveys are really designed to create a dialogue among the faculty with the kids talking about grit. Angela Duckworth, and she's the reason you mentioned True Grit, the movie earlier, she's a University of Pennsylvania researcher who's really gotten lots of prominence for this. She won the MacArthur Award a few months ago. If you Google, and I couldn't use it in my book because it's copyrighted, if you Google, I asked her, Angela Duckworth and grit, there's a grit survey, 12 items. And mm-hmm. it's pretty simple, but it's also pretty valid. And it shows the degree of grit that you exercise. And so I did something a little different in the book with kids, with faculty. And what I really want to do is raise the journey toward grit is something that's very conscious and part of the class discussion, part of the school discussion.
Yeah. Can you give me some sense of what some of those questions are that will reveal the grit-worthiness, if you will, or
sure,
grittiness
sure.
of?
Sure. I mean, it's the kind of things you'd expect when something's hard. Do you hang in? Do you try something that's difficult? Do you give up? Do you keep your focus over time? When Duckworth talks about grit and her work was written about in Paul Tough's book, How Children Succeed. She talks about grit really as being very, very long term. Interestingly, it's a 12-item questionnaire, and they have found that it is a much higher correlate of who actually attends West Point after they've been accepted and gone through boot camp than is grade point or SAT scores. So she's really getting at something with these questions.
Are young people perceptive enough about themselves to answer these things accurately?
Well, the questions are pretty simple, and I think you raise a good question. What you want kids to do is answer them purely and honestly, and it's looking at their work effort, how hard they try. If there's an extra credit, this is not her question, but if there's extra credit on a test, do you take it or do you take the easy way out? It's really reflecting on what are your effort and what are your work habits. At New City School, one of the items on our report card is motivation. And what we're looking at there is how much internal motivation kids have. Do they want to do the best, or do they want to do just what they need to do?
Mm-hmm. Well, True Grit. It's an interesting subject, Tom. We have a couple of minutes left. Anything else about this subject that you want to make sure that people know?
Well, it's interesting, Don. I think it fits in the larger context about the direction, and I'm going to sound pretty global here, but of American education. If you go back to 1983, Ronald Reagan's The Nation at Risk speech, when he talked about mm-hmm. the American education system and then No Child Left Behind and Now Race to the Top, our kids are not doing as well as they should do in school. And I want to make sure your listeners don't misunderstand me. Kids need to read, write, and calculate, absolutely. In no way am I vitiating that. But what we've come to learn, I believe, is that that's only part of the equation. What I say is that is the floor, not the ceiling. My shorthand line at New City School is I say, who you are is more important than what you know. And that really means we have a responsibility to teach kids character. It's now called the non-cognitive skills. And we're talking about perseverance. We're talking about caring. We're talking about grit. And it seems to me that for too long, and I understand that, educators are measured on test scores, schools are considered at risk. I get all that. But I think we really are losing sight of what the goal is if we fail to prepare kids to be successful adults. And that goes beyond reading, writing, calculating.
How did we get to this point, Tom Herr? You know, time was when we performed very well on a global basis. We're not doing that now. We're just off the charts low on STEM, science, technical and math and engineering subjects. How did we get where we are?
Well, that's for five more programs.
I know, I know.
But, you know, quickly, we have a very high poverty rate. And, you know, when kids aren't being well-fed, when they're not having a house to go home to at night, those things really, really matter. I think education has gotten skewed, too, when I talked about the test scores. I'm all for accountability. I'm all for measurability. But it's too easy to focus only on those things that can be measured. And we really are off track. And I think that talking about grit is an important step in the right direction. I'm encouraged by the dialogue educators have been having nationally for the past couple years. Again, Angela Duckworth gets a lot of credit for looking at the affective component, looking at how children learn, looking at what we can do to help them be better people. Caring, for example, and we've not talked about that a lot. It's really important that adults be caring people who appreciate diversity, who can work with others of different colors, different racial background, different economic. Well, if we believe that, and we do, schools have to work on it. It's not enough to say, well, that's done at home, that's done at church, that's done in the neighborhood. We need to look much more globally, much more holistically at our kids.
Well, you're probably more optimistic than I am, and I see that there are politicians out there, all of them run on the need for better education, and then when they get wherever they're going, they cut budgets and
sadly
and pronounce that the Department of Education should go away. I mean, where does it start? Does it start at the grassroots level? Does it start with your parent teachers association or the one at the school next door?
Well, I think so. I mean, you know, I always say parents are more important than schools. Parents need to get involved. We can't say the school's going to solve it. Even my school can't solve it without parents supporting us. Parents need to get involved. We need to be beating on the doors of the state legislators. Without this whole situation with the unaccredited districts and what's happening is a real black eye on the state legislature. Months have passed. They still haven't done anything. You know, and one of the things we know is they're not going to move unless we force them to. And that comes from people writing their legislatures, calling, getting involved. Our kids are too important not to.
Do they listen to the educators?
No. No, sadly. But I am optimistic because, you know, when you look at where we are vis-a-vis where we were, we're better today than we were 10 or 20 years ago. We've got to be better in the future. And one of the good things, if you will, about all these international comparisons is people can't hide. It's like everybody thinks Congress is bad and then they reelect their congressman. Everybody thinks education is bad, but my school is fine. The more we can begin looking at what we need to do, the more we can have strategies that really can address that directly. And again, our kids are too important to lose a generation.
Well, your school, New City School, has a great reputation, and we have about a minute and a half left. Tom Herr, what do you think that you're doing that other people should be doing?
Well, you know, as I always say, I wish we were as good as our reputation. You know, we are far from...
Don't we all?
we are far from perfect. You know, we've got a wonderful formula, which is we have families who care about their kids, who value education. I've got the best group of teachers I can imagine. And we've got a mission. We all come together and we define how we succeed in a very special way. We value academics because that's key. We talk about the personal intelligences. This is grit. We talk about who you are being more important than what you know. We talk about diversity. Diversity is part of our curriculum. It's woven in there. And we talk about joyful learning. Kids should want to come to school. That isn't magic, but it's really stepping back, I think, and saying, what do kids need to be successful in tomorrow's world?
What percentage of your kids go on to higher education?
You know, I don't know that. I would suspect it's 95, 99. I mean, I can't think of any kid who hasn't. And again, we have good families. It's not all us. We get the kinds of families every school wants.
Yeah. Well, again, we've pointed this out a couple of times during the course of our discussion here that is a very important ingredient in success for the youngster, for the school, for everybody who is involved. All right. Tom Herr, thanks so much for being with us. Tom Herr is the head of the New City School. We've been talking about his book, Fostering Grit, How Do I Prepare My Students for the Real World? And we want to point out we've been talking about teaching them how to deal with failure. We're not teaching them how to fail. We're teaching them how to respond to failure, something that all of us have to do at one time or more or another. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about Pope Francis and his impact on the Catholic Church in the years since his predecessor, Pope Benedict XVI, announced his resignation. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.